versus Joan Barnett.
May it please the court, Augustine Garcia on behalf of the appellant.
Proceed.
Your honors, in this case, it's important to review the appeal counsel remands. This case was actually remanded by the appeal counsel on two separate occasions. The first was February 1997, and the second was May of 1999. In the initial remand, the appeals counsel instructed the same ALJ throughout these proceedings that the ALJ should properly or should evaluate the mental impairment. That was one of the instructions. That's critical here because if the mental impairment is not properly evaluated, then the case is open to conjecture and supposition with regard to what the appellant's residual functional capacity actually is. And this would violate Social Security ruling 96-8P. In reviewing the record, including the lower court's decisions, the court order, the magistrate's report, and the ALJ's decisions, it's clear that the claimant's mental impairment was never properly evaluated. In support of that, reference can be made to Exhibit D56. This is the new and material evidence that the court relied on in the May 1999 remand. The appeals counsel relied on, and in that exhibit, it specifically states that Mr. Wilkins has a schizoaffective disorder. More importantly, what does that mean? How does that limit him? This is the crucial answer, because when we look at this functional assessment in the report, from there we can ascertain what's he able to do in view of that diagnosis. That doctor in Exhibit D56, the same exhibit that the appeals counsel relied upon, said, no, this claimant is incapable of routine repetitive work, socializing with coworkers or supervising personnel, and more importantly, he's unable to tolerate work stress. Now, that's critical here. The appeals counsel states that in their instructions that the ALJ should look at this, that the ALJ should make a residual functional capacity assessment and present hypothetical questions to a vocational expert based on that new and material evidence. Now, that new material evidence is consistent with what was previously in the record. And what was previously in the record is critical here as well. We know that the record at that time contained a global assessment functional score of 40. And basically, this was brought out at the lower court level. And the court base, and what is meant by a GAF 40? The DSM-4 basically states that if an individual has this type of rating, that individual would be incapable of any occupational functioning. And that score is very consistent with Exhibit D56, that is, that new and material evidence. More importantly, in the appellant's reply brief at page 2, there is consistent reference to Mr. Wilkins' depression, his auditory hallucinations, his depressed mood, his inability to sleep. Now, that evidence is completely disregarded by this ALJ. And all we have to do is look at the record. And the ALJ at the last hearing never questioned the claimant about his mental impairment. And because of that, there has never been any meaningful review of this applicant's mental impairment. When the appeals counsel remanded the case, instructions were made.
Hasn't this court reversed under Dixon ALJs who took the part of doctors?
Your Honor, that is correct.
And reverse doctor's findings?
That is correct. And because of that, here, what the ALJ essentially was endeavored in was she made an independent medical finding. She basically said that exhibit number D56 was internally inconsistent, because if Mr. Wilkins was that disabled or that impaired by his mental impairment, his doctor should have hospitalized him.
Didn't the doctors find that he didn't need hospitalization?
That is absolutely correct.
That he was also able to return to work?
Well, what they found, Your Honor, at page 15 in the main brief and in the transcript at 539, they felt that they could treat his mental impairment on an outpatient basis.
That's frequently done, isn't it?
Yes, that's frequent.
Yeah, about 80% of all mental patients are treated with drugs on an outpatient basis.
I don't know the percentages, Your Honor, but I do know that in this case, this doctor states that she preferred to treat him with medication and outpatient treatment. And because of that, the ALJ failed to recognize that. And finally, the appeals counsel, in remanding this case, directed the ALJ to make assess limitations based on the aforementioned medication and present these limitations to a vocational expert by way of a hypothetical question. And in appellant's reply brief at page 8, we have a vocational expert testifying that in view of the new and material evidence, exhibit number D56, that this claimant would be incapable of performing any type of work. Again, that's not reflected in the decision. And finally,
if I may interrupt there for a moment, sir, did you have a problem with the posing of the hypothetical question, what it actually says?
Well, if you review, Your Honor, if we look at page 8, you can see that it was very difficult for the judge to allow me. She was reluctant to allow me to question the vocational expert based on that, and the exchange is in the reply brief. Because of the fact that the record has not been fully developed, and because of the fact that the mental impairment was not accurately developed, this case is similar to the case to the evidentiary errors that were committed.
What do you want? Three kicks at the cat?
You've
had two now, haven't you?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now you want a third?
That's correct, because we never had the first, and the appeals counsel's orders have never been complied with here. So I'll reserve any additional time, remaining time, for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Melinda Holland for Commissioner Bonheim. Mr. Wilkins.
Can you talk a little louder?
Yes, sir.
Because these mics aren't working too well.
Mr. Wilkins claims disability insurance benefits and supplemental security income beginning in 1992. His eligibility for disability insurance benefits, however, ended in June 94. He remained eligible for supplemental security income, a needs-based benefit, through the time of the ALJ decision in 2000. His arguments to this court focus on the diagnosis of schizoaffective disorder, which was first recorded in his treatment records in October of 1997, well after his insured status for disability insurance benefits ended. He urges the court to reverse the ALJ's decision on the strength of two 1999 medical opinions. The ALJ, however, explicitly addressed both of these opinions. She reasonably discounted the January 1999 opinion of extreme functional limitations because they were contradictory, unsupported by objective clinical findings, inconsistent with his treatment, and apparently based on Mr. Wilkins' own statements without regard to whether those statements were accurate or consistent with his daily activities. I'd like to briefly address the point about whether his treatment at the VA was consistent with hospitalization or consistent with disability. The ALJ concluded that his treatment and the types of treatment he was rendered were inconsistent with the extreme opinions of that psychiatrist in January 1999. The last treatment that Mr. Wilkins sought or received from the VA prior to that January 1999 opinion was in February of 1998, at which time he did have a depressed mood and he did complain of auditory hallucinations, but he also had an appropriate affect. His insight and judgment were good. He had adequate cognitive functions. The treating psychiatrist at that time did not change his medications. Previously, when he had voiced concerns about his symptoms of schizoaffective disorder, they had increased medication.
Was he at that time ingesting his medication as prescribed?
There's no notation in the VA treatment records that he has a problem with compliance. There's no notation that says he definitely takes it, but there's no notation that this patient has a problem with compliance with his medication.
And there is a notation that he is taking. Is that what you said?
There is no notation either way.
Either way.
Right. Okay. It's not noted as a problem. It's not positively identified either.
Okay.
In July of 99, when he had a very thorough neuropsychological evaluation, at that point the psychologist did call his girlfriend, who said that she monitors his dosages closely and was fairly certain he was taking it. That's the evidence of record that I remember regarding that issue. But going back to the January 99 opinion, that seems to imply that the least little stress would make him psychotic. There's nothing in the VA treatment records before that to indicate that that would be the case or his problems were that severe. He had symptoms of schizoaffective disorder, which were being handled with medication. And furthermore, it wasn't just medication was maintained at the same level. The doctor asked him to return in about 2.5 months. If this is a person who was on the edge of becoming psychotic at any moment, that seems to be a rather conservative, rather dangerously conservative recommendation. Additionally, the ALJ weighed the July 1999 neuropsychological evaluation and credited the mental limitations it identified. The global assessment of functioning score in that report is not conclusive evidence of functional abilities or work abilities. The DSM, which outlines the procedure of AXIS 5 and how that score is assigned, does not intend for that score to be used as a disability rating. It's intended for treatment purposes to evaluate how effective treatment has been or how effective treatment may be. It's not assigned purely on functional basis alone, but it's also an indicator of severity of symptoms. And as one of the examples in the DSM states, an individual could have frequent but managed symptoms of schizophrenia and thus qualifies for a rating of 40, but still have it not affect his behavior to a large degree. The ALJ went through that entire evaluation and relied more heavily on the well-explained opinions in the narrative portion. The ALJ incorporated work-related limitations in concentration because of the difficulties in concentration and memory identified in that report. He incorporated work-related limitations on social interaction because of the social isolation from depression and social problems identified in that report. It was reasonable of him to limit the residual functional capacity to only routine, repetitive work that did not require constant interaction with others. Appellant argues that the ALJ failed to follow the Appeals Council's remand order. The remand order, however, didn't instruct the ALJ to do anything the regulations didn't already require her to do. He implies that the ALJ failed to properly evaluate the subjective complaints, the RFC, and include all the limitations in the hypothetical. The ALJ, however, considered Mr. Wilkins' testimony of subjective symptoms and gave appropriate reasons, the transcript page 19, for finding was not credible. He considered how the ALJ considered how Mr. Wilkins' RFC might be affected by his symptoms and limitations and gave explanations for how those limitations were accommodated, and the ALJ presented those limits to the VE in the hypothetical question. The ALJ therefore fully complied with the Appeals Council's order of remand and the regulations and the appeals and the ALJ's decision.
Does that hypothetical question take into consideration his problem with concentration?
It limited him to routine, repetitive work, and the ALJ's decision explains that due to problems in concentration, she assigned that limit.
But as I recall from the evidence in the record, the it was a very narrow situation there that the ALJ had to be aware of. While he could certainly do things that were routine in nature, his lack of concentration powers would also make him frustrated with something very repetitive, such as assembly line work.
I don't recall that evidence, Your Honor. There's nothing further?
Okay. Thank you. 1 minute, sir.
Thank you. The only hypothetical question by this ALJ was that the claimant was able to perform routine, repetitive work and no constant interaction with others. The appeals counsel had earlier directed her to make reference to the exhibits in the record to support that. That was not done here.
What should have been done?
What should have been done was that exhibit number D56 at page 8 in the reply and the testimony from the vocational expert based on that exhibit should have been followed here. And if it had been, then there would have been testimony establishing that, and there is testimony establishing because we have it in the record, that this, that Mr. Wilkins is in fact incapable of sustaining productive employment. The DSM does rely on a GAF 40 as to treatment goals. And if a person has a GAF of 40, the health professional then realizes that this is not someone that he should be establishing a goal that this person should be returned to employment. And that's in response to the argument that was offered by the appellee.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right, we will proceed to case number 9.